This is Around the A, a weekly look at the top stories, news, and interviews from the NHL's top developmental league with your hosts, David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network.
It is Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network and wherever else you get your podcasts. Episode 12 here with David Foote and Patrick Williams. Glad to have you back again for another week. Lots coming up on the show today. We're going to head down to Colorado, check in with Kevin McGlue, who's the play-by-play voice of the Colorado Eagles. We're also going to talk to one of the highest paid players in the American Hockey League, perhaps one of the biggest names. Pat was able to catch up with Andrew Ladd, so we will hear that chat later on in the show. But another busy week in the league, Pat, as things kind of got back to full swing after the holiday break.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's always kind of an interesting week that, you know, the past couple of weeks you've been in that holiday mode, and the schedule's always a little goofy around the holidays where teams try to really pack the games in there while families are off and, they want to, give a bump to their attendance. But this past weekend, it got a little bit more, back to a normal pace. So I think you see more kind of what we're accustomed to and more of the traditional Friday, Saturday, occasional Sunday game schedule games. And it was certainly an eventful weekend. And, I keep thinking about the line you've had at different points this year. This is a league of streaks, and that's true at, almost any time of the year in this league. But, it seems like right now the streaks, both good and bad, are, at a peak. And, you're really starting to see some separation in the standings now. It's taking a little bit of time, but, there are some teams that are really building themselves a nice cushion or putting themselves in good position, and then vice versa. There are some teams that, if they have aspirations, are making it really difficult on themselves and are now going to kind of have to go on a, similar, hot streak, to offset some of the damage from recent slow losing streaks that they've been on. So, yeah, it's an interesting time of the year, and you're now really going to start getting in that schedule grind of the second half, and we'll start seeing kind of who's for real and maybe who's not.
Yeah, and let's look at some of those streaks. We'll delve into a couple of the teams on opposite ends of the spectrum in a minute, but if we start in the Atlantic Division, Hartford, Hershey, Springfield, all on four-game winning streaks. Charlotte is on a five-game winning streak, and then Providence has lost four in a row. Not as many big streaks in the North Division. Laval have won four in a row. Cleveland has won three in a row. The Binghamton Devils have won four in a row, which is a big surprise for a team that has been in the basement of that division throughout the course of the season. Only really the Iowa Wild sticking out with a winning streak in the Central. They've won three in a row. Rockford continuing to slide. They've lost six in a row. And then way out west in the Pacific Division, Colorado 8-0-2-1. So that's a point streak that they've got going. Bakersfield on a five-game point streak as well. And that division seems to be all right as far as avoiding significant losing streak. But it really seems to be that time of year where teams are figuring it out or not. And you're either really helping your cause, as you say, or doing yourself a big-time disservice. Because this is not the time of year that you want to start falling behind in the standings, because you're running out of time at pretty much the halfway point to get back into things.
Yeah, and you also start now running into the NHL trade deadline. Will start perking up in the next couple of weeks, and then you run the possibility, depending on your parent club, that you may lose some of your top prospects. We saw that last year with the Chicago Wolves. Eric Brandstrom dealt at the NHL trade deadline. To their credit, they were so deep that they were able to overcome that. They made it all the way to the final, but a lot of teams wouldn't have been able to do that. So, this is a time when you really want to bank some points here, because you don't know what's going to be coming down the road in February and March and what your roster may look like. Injuries start to pile up, and if your parent club is maybe out of competition or out of contention, they want to maybe start looking at some of their prospects. So they start pulling guys off, and before you know it, you're bringing guys in on PTOs and your roster's kind of held together by a couple Band-Aids. So yeah, this is a time now. It's really your last real good push to have kind of what your team may look like, you know, before all the potential roster moves hit. So if you can't get it going now, you know, especially as the games start to pile up, you're really going to be in a tight spot, you know, come March. And, you know, and that's when the schedule just often really goes crazy. And, you know, I think back last year, Syracuse played 16 games in 30 nights. And, you know, if you're not at your best or you're trying to make a, you know, a real push to try to catch up to your competition and, you know, get above that playoff line, you know, that's a tough time to do that. So this is not a league that's very forgiving in the second half. And, you know, the more you can kind of do your work now, the easier you'll make it on yourself come March, April. And then if you can get yourself into a position for the playoffs, that's the whole objective here. Get your prospects that opportunity, get them at least a couple of rounds of playoff hockey. And, you know, you've really seen some young guys, they really blossom from that. So yeah, this is a kind of a really crucial time of the year for a lot of teams. Even if it is a little bit more that schedule, you know, mid-season dog day type schedule grind.
Yeah, well, let's look at one of the teams that's done some pretty good work over the last couple of weeks, the Charlotte Checkers, the defending champs. We talked a lot about them earlier on in our season of the program, about how they were kind of underwhelming, being a team that came off a title. And again, we noted the coaching change and some roster turnover and things that they've had to deal with. But winners of five in a row, and they've knocked off some pretty good teams, beating Cleveland and beating Providence. And they're scoring a lot, and they're not allowing a lot of goals over that stretch of five games. You got a 4-2 win, a 5-1 win, a 3-1 win, a 4-0 shutout, and another 4-1 win at Providence. All but one of those wins, should mention as well, coming on the road. So this team down, you know, Southeast United States, turning things up in the early part of the new year.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with Charlotte, given their location, they find themselves on these almost similar to a Western Conference team where they get the 5-6-7 game road trips. You know, similarly, they get a 4-6 game homestand a lot of times, which, you know, can work, you know, for or against you. But they're in one of those real long schedule grinds now. 7-game road trip, like you said, started off back-to-back games, Cleveland, both wins, and they go into Providence, which is just one of the real elite teams in the league. Shut them out last night, or Saturday night, and then they had a shutout going late in Sunday afternoon's game. So, I mean, they could have shut out one of the top teams in the league in back-to-back games if not for a late Providence goal. So it's really impressive. They have another kind of busy week coming up. They're going to Wilkes-Barre-Scranton, one of the teams are battling with for playoff positioning to get you know, into that top four, and then into Hartford, the top team in the conference, and then down to Bridgeport. Then they come home and they have even more divisional games, this, you know, back to back against Hershey. So the schedule's tough on them, you know, in the best of times. And you know, the first half was really a challenge for them. Ryan Warsawski had his, you know, his work cut out for him with all the roster changes and everything. And, you know, he's learning the ropes himself, youngest coach in the league. But he's done a really nice job there. That team looks a lot different from the way they were playing earlier on in the season. A little bit more, I think, committed to their defensive structure. And then you have a goalie like Alison Jelkovic, top goalie in the league last year, and, you know, a real standout guy who is a huge part of their playoff run and eventual winning the cup. And he's on his game, and they have a solid team there, but it took a long time to get that all together. But you know, to their credit, they're really starting to do it, and they've emerged now as another team, that Atlantic Division race. So you know, that's that division's starting to really get a lot tighter than it was earlier. And you know, it's gonna be a tough battle there for, you know, probably at least six of those teams now going for four spots, 10 points separating first and sixth place. So just kind of goes to show you what that division's all about. And, you know, if the Lehigh Valley Phantoms ever get their act together, they could be another team as well.
Well, let's talk about the Lehigh Valley Phantoms and maybe starting to get their act together. I mean, they were on an absolute stinker coming into the week. They did end their, what, six game or so losing streak by beating the Toronto Marlies, you know, on the road after a loss in Belleville, where they snapped a 2.5 game scoreless streak in a 5-3 loss, and they played well in Belleville the other night. I'd said to some folks around the rink that sometimes it's tough to see the correlation between an AHL club and its NHL parent based on style of play, because you know you have to watch a lot of games, and sometimes it's very system related. But within 10 minutes of the game here in Belleville last week, you could just tell that it was Philadelphia Flyers hockey. They're a big bruising team. They've got a good young goaltender in Alex Lyon, and they're a team that has more skill on paper than what's showing on the ice right now. And if they can wipe out that six-game slide and start to put some wins together, because they've only won back-to-back games a handful of times on the season, they could make a push, but they've got a lot of work to do.
They certainly do. I mean, I think that's for them is the biggest challenge right now. But I mean, July 1st, free agency, they were the most active team in the league. They were going out and signing, top AHL veterans almost left and right that day. They brought in Cal Riley. They brought in some really good young or, experienced defensemen, Andy Walensky, Tyler Weatherspoon. I mean, they had a lot going for them, at least on paper, in the offseason. And, the strange thing for them is, you look at what they are, and they've gotten the goaltending. So, I mean, right off the bat, every night they do have a chance to win. But it's a lot of those guys that's lined big deals to play there and aren't producing offensively. Greg Carey's kind of carried a lot of the load, but Cal O'Reilly has 2 goals all season. I mean, he's a setup man to start with, but, I think everybody would have him doing a little bit more than that. You go right down the list, just a lot of guys who aren't pulling their weight. And, this league especially, like, you need your veterans, especially in the first half, to really do a lot of that work, pull the team through some of the early growing pains that every team will have to go through. And that hasn't necessarily happened with some of those veterans. And then, you had Morgan Frost, a top prospect who was up for an extended period with Philly, and you had Joel Farabee's up. And, some of the guys that maybe they were counting on, they never really gotten too established in their lineup. So they've had a lot going against them. But, I mean, with that goaltending duo, especially, a guy like Alex Lyon, one of the higher-end goalies in the league, you should have a chance to win every night, and he's done his part. But this is a team, too. I mean, there's some, I guess if you really want to buy into the analytics, some scoring gods haven't quite been with them. They're 7.4 shot percentage. Generally, you want to be in the 9-10 range at least on average. And, so that, you start calculating that over the course of the season, that starts making a difference. And, so there's a lot of things. Their power play's not worked. Their PK's not worked. So those are issues as well. But, that's a team that if they ever can get it together, they could be a team that could go on a good run with the talent and the veteran experience they do have. The question will be, if they'd dig themselves too big a hole, maybe too late. So
yeah,
they're an interesting team. But last year they started off, had a great first half, and then kind of plummeted down the standings in the second half. This year it's been a little bit the opposite. We'll see if they can flip it around and go on a good second half run here. Because if they can, I mean, that division will become a lot more interesting.
Yeah, they're about 10 or so points out of the playoff race right now in the Atlantic Division. And the problem for Lehigh Valley, I think, is that they've stopped this losing skid, which is crucial. They seem to have figured out how to score again, 7 goals in their last 2 games. But now they're going to get a steady diet of North Division teams in Utica, home to Laval, Cleveland, Syracuse, Binghamton, Rochester, and then they go back out to Providence to play in the Atlantic Division again. And with how tight the North Division is right now, teams in that division are just scrapping for points. So you are going to be in a battle every time you play a team from the North Division, probably right through the rest of the season. So it's going to be difficult for them, I think, right through the month of January, pretty much.
Yeah, you look around the league, around the schedule, and you think, okay, well, maybe there's 2 points there or 2 points there. But, even you look at the Binghamton Devils now. That's a team that's pulled off 4 in a row. There's really – there used to be times where there were some games you can almost pencil in your 2 points. You can't do that anymore. And this league is so tight. Every game now, it's almost flip a coin on the results sometimes. And so like you said, having to go up there, I mean, at this point, everybody in that division in the North is more or less in the playoff race. Even Binghamton's made it a little bit more interesting with their recent hot streak. And if they can get it going, that could be another wild card in the whole picture. So when you look at that schedule, though, for Lehigh Valley, I mean, that's a rough schedule. I mean, and you know, that is to start to take into account some of the travel burden and everything that comes with that, and you know, and then obviously the level of competition. So yeah, they don't get an easy break. The schedule is certainly not their friend right now. And you go right down that list. I mean, you finally come out of those division games, or there's out of division games, and you get back to back with Providence, and then you go to Hartford. I mean, so that's a rough schedule. And you go really then you're in the heart of the Atlantic Division playing some of your top rival teams. So they're gonna have their work cut out for them, I think, you know, in the best of circumstances. But we'll see what they can do, because they are a team, you know. I think the pieces are there if they can just somehow pull it all together and not, you know, I think the biggest thing for now, you know, like you said, is just stopping the bleeding. They got that win, yes, Sunday in Toronto against a Marlies team that's been a little bit of on a slide lately. So, yeah, it's an interesting group, those Phantoms. You know, they're a group that's they have some swagger to them, but, you know, there are nights where, you know, it's just not falling their way. But if they can bump up, let's say, that shot percentage, start getting some bounces going their way, they could really make this really interesting.
You're listening to episode 12 of Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams. Again, you can find us on social media at Around the A Pod. You can email us at aroundtheapod@gmail.com if you've got any guest suggestions, thoughts or comments. And of course, you can hear us at the Sports Podcasting Network or wherever you get your podcast. And if you are listening on platforms like Apple or Spotify, make sure you subscribe and rate the podcast as well. Any feedback we can get is much appreciated. Let's look at the Colorado Eagles, Pat. We're going to get into a deep dive here in a couple minutes with Kevin McGlue, who is the voice of the Colorado Eagles. But this is an interesting story. This is a team that won back-to-back Kelly Cups in the ECHL, gets promoted, if you want to look at it that way, to the American Hockey League, tied nicely with an NHL team that's not too far away, which, again, is the trend that we've seen in this league in recent years. They make the playoffs in their first season in the American Hockey League, which is not an easy thing to do. And they're sitting in pretty good spot right now in the Pacific Division, solidly in third place, 5 points back of second, and 4 points up on fourth. What is it about the Colorado Eagles, in your mind, that has seemed to work so well in this transition to the American League?
Well, they already had, I think the big thing for them is they had a lot of the infrastructure already in place. So right off the bat, they had built themselves really a top-notch front office staff. There's a lot of continuity there, you know, off the ice. They play in a really nice facility out there, the Budweiser Events Center. They're about an hour or so north of Denver, where the Avalanche are. So a pretty good hockey region to start with. And then so that's been those are the kind of the things in favor there. Obviously, the affiliation's a big thing. I mean, I think it's one thing the AHL's gotten right in the last couple years, especially, that you know, it used to be affiliations weren't always necessarily really correlated to you know, geography. Well, now it makes sense. You know, you're an hour from Denver to have the local NHL team as your affiliate, you know, rather than how it used to be where it might be some random team from the other side of the United States or something. So that's been the infrastructure's there. And it was a matter of just kind of transitioning that in the AHL. It's not an easy transition because it is in many ways a much different league. You're accountable to the NHL club a lot more, which, you know, can be a positive or a negative depending on your circumstances. But for the most part, I mean, it's been a pretty wildly successful transition, and they've handled that adjustment really well out there.
Yeah, we'll find out a little bit more about what's made the transition so successful and who some of the key guys are with Kevin McGlue. He's been the voice of the Colorado Eagles since the 2009-10 season. He's been with the team for 14 of their 16 seasons. That goes back to the Central Hockey League and the ECHL, because, I mean, that's one of the cool things about this team. It's almost like a soccer team over in England, where they start down in League Three and work their way up to the Premier League. It's really interesting, so we will learn more about them with Kevin McGlue. You can find him on Twitter at KMcGlue, and we'll hear from him next on Around the Edge. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I look forward to catching up and getting you, I guess, an idea of what we're all about here in our second year.
Yeah, well, second year here, but obviously a pretty established franchise in, you know, two other leagues before this, and coming off two Kelly Cup victories as well before the AHL, I'll say promotion, but perhaps, you know, it's not seen that way. But what has the transition been like from ECHL to AHL down there?
You know, I think it's been pretty good. I know it was certainly tough the first year, and for a good reason. As you had said, won that championship the year prior to moving to the American League, so it really compressed the schedule. We played into mid-June, so everything had to happen really quickly. We had to do a lot of work at the Budweiser Event Center to get things ready from a logistical standpoint, and then everything that goes into it from a hockey standpoint, people moving up here that were previously with San Antonio, and in that capacity with Colorado Avalanche now becoming a part of the Colorado Eagles. But, you know, I think after the first year is now been completed, and everybody has a good sense of the operations day-to-day in the American Hockey League, it's been much, much easier this year, and now starting to enjoy some success on the ice.
What are some of the, you know, differences between the ECHL and the AHL that you guys had to deal with down there?
You know, I don't know if there were a ton as far as logistical changes, and keeping in mind, I guess, that we'd already made one prior league change several years before we moved to the American League. We moved from the CHL, and I think there were a lot of people that loved the Central Hockey League and loved the style of play. It was a really physical league, a lot of fights, and certainly I think people felt really engaged with the personalities on the ice, and you'd see them around town a lot and get to know them, and they would set down roots, and they would stay here for 4, 5, 6+ years, and then next thing you know, they're living here for the rest of their lives and ingraining themselves in the community. So there was some adjustment going from the CHL to the ECHL, and then you win the back-to-back championships, and I think everyone was excited for the move up to the American League, but at the same time, you thought, well, boy, just starting to really find some good success here in the ECHL after getting knocked out in the first round the previous 5 years. So I think there was a little trepidation there. But now that people have seen the product, and certainly having the affiliation with the Avalanche just down the road in Denver, it's really made it a very smooth transition.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the market. Obviously, just outside of Denver, as you say, in Loveland, what has made the city such a hot spot for hockey? And, you know, how has that, I suppose, eased the transition a little bit?
Yeah, and it has been a great spot, and it has been that way since our first year in 2003-2004, and certainly it was the Avalanche, you know, laying the groundwork for hockey here in the state of Colorado and along the Front Range, and the success that they had. They won the Stanley Cup, their second one in 2001, and then the Eagles start in 2003, so it was really good timing in that sense. So, you know, it made it very accessible. You weren't having to drive down to Denver. People that lived in Loveland, Fort Collins, Greeley, Windsor, Longmont, all these areas around the Budweiser Event Center, we're able to just drive 10, 15 minutes and really have a team that you can kind of call your own in your backyard. So it's been something that's progressed through a couple of different league changes. And I think it's been a case where, you know, people that come here and play, whether you're playing for the Eagles or you come in as a visitor, you see that it's a fun environment. It really is. We've been very, very fortunate in that regard. And it's a great home ice atmosphere. And it's something that I know we all take a lot of pride in.
Kevin, you know, with this transition, I think one of the things that teams who've done that before have struggled with is trying to find that balance between the identity that they've built as something of a little bit more of an independent operation, and then balancing the needs of the NHL, both in terms of on the ice and also marketing-wise. How's that transition gone, and how has that balance been struck by everybody there in the Colorado front office?
Yeah, and again, it is different when you're not necessarily owned by the NHL club and it is independent and you've had some transition, you've had success in some other leagues, and now you kind of have to rebrand yourself to a certain extent. But, you know, we've tried to maintain our identity, and with that, it's being very community involved. It's being out there in the community on a regular basis. And that's something that in talking to the Avalanche when, you know, the tires are being kicked on this move, it was, hey, we're not going to sacrifice that to make this move. And they said, absolutely not. We want that to continue to be a real hallmark of the Colorado Eagles and the community in Northern Colorado. So, you know, the Avalanche were very good and they were a big part of really alleviating, I think, some of the initial concerns about making a move like that and what the impact could be, particularly on the fan base. And, you know, I think once they see the quality of hockey, once they see guys going up and playing at the Pepsi Center for the Avalanche, and you're starting to see, you know, these guys really truly are one step away from the highest level of hockey, and now you're seeing them right here in your backyard. It's very exciting, and I think there's been a tremendous buy-in by the fans, and I think as an organization we've tried to make that as smooth as possible.
This year you introduced an Avalanche team-themed jersey. Can you kind of just take us behind that whole, you know, from start to finish, and as well as kind of what the thinking was in deciding to do that, and kind of combining your identity as the Colorado Eagles, and then adding that Avalanche element as well.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's a very unique situation that we have here in the fact that we do have a very close proximity to our NHL affiliates. We do have the vast majority of our fans who are Avalanche fans as well. So, you know, you're talking about fans that have Eagles jerseys right next to Avalanche jerseys in their closet, but we don't share a building. It's obviously it's not owned by the Avalanche, so there is some separation, but it's a way to certainly pay tribute to what we think is a very good affiliation that, as you had said, helped to bring two Kelly Cup championships here and could combine these two organizations that I think 95% of our fans root for at the two different levels in the AHL and the NHL. And they're very well received, and people really enjoyed them. It's something we worked hand in hand with the Avalanche on those concepts during the summer. And brought him around in the office and tried to keep the identity of the Eagles there in the crest, but certainly pay homage to what we're very proud of, which is a great affiliation with the Colorado Avalanche.
It's such an interesting thing because there's not a lot of hockey teams down that way that you can easily say, you know, the fans of the Eagles are almost naturally going to cheer for the Avalanche, whereas, you know, here in Belleville, it's an Ottawa Senators farm team, but there's so many Maple Leaf fans, so many Montreal fans, that it makes it difficult to get that fan base. How much does that support, I suppose, from the fans, from the community, help out with the on-ice product and with players getting comfortable in that market?
Yeah, it's huge. And again, you do have guys that I think the vast majority of the players live up near the Budweiser Event Center, live in Northern Colorado. But, you know, we do have the ability to have certain players live down near Denver. And that makes it easier for the transition for some of those players that do go up and down a little bit more often. But you're right. And I think you look at some of the other affiliations that are out there that are very good affiliations, but they play in the same building. Well, all of a sudden, it seems like, and this is just an outsider's perspective, that sometimes you have to pick and choose. Hey, there's an AHL game played on Friday, but an NHL game on Saturday. Which one are we going to pick to go to this weekend? And you know, I think it's been a good balance up here, and we have a large enough market between the cities here in Northern Colorado that you're not reliant necessarily on Denver to bring people up to come to these games and have to worry about going head-to-head with the Avalanche. There have been plenty of games where they've sold out down there at the Pepsi Center, and we've had a sellout go on the same night at the Budweiser Event Center. But, you know, when we put the score up for the Avalanche game, everybody roars. So, you know, it's just a kind of a perfect distance between the two teams. You're not too far, you're not too close, but again, you're not sharing the market between two NHL teams or even more. So you do have that alignment. And again, like I said, it was the Avalanche that laid the groundwork for, you know, what's been a tremendous sense of pride in hockey in the state of Colorado. So we just tried to build upon that and utilize that affiliation the best we can. And I think it's gone very, very well.
It certainly seems to have. We're chatting with Kevin McGlue who is the voice of the Colorado Eagles, Kay McGlue on Twitter, if you want to find him there. So we've talked a bit about the identity of the team off the ice. How about on the ice? How would you describe the group that that Greg Cronin has there and the way that they play?
Well, they're fast. They're very, very quick. It's a hardworking team. It's a team that, you know, Greg Cronin, I think, since he came here at the beginning of last year, had said, you know, we play at altitude. Let's take advantage of that with our conditioning. Let's be a very, very well-conditioned team that can try to win home games in the third period and try to tire teams out, try to utilize our speed. And you know, it's... I think it's worked really well. I mean, this was a team that just wasn't that healthy at the beginning of the year because of injuries that you had up at the NHL level with the Avalanche. And obviously there's that trickle-down effect. We had some injuries here with the Eagles as well. So they did a good job of just kind of keeping the head above water there for a couple of months, maybe a month and a half. And then now all of a sudden you're seeing guys like TJ Tynan come back, Sheldon Dries, Logan O'Connor. I mean, these have been big difference makers for this team. And now that you're healthy, the power play has been better. The penalty kill has responded. And that you're putting the puck in the back of the net. I mean, during that eight-game win streak, it was just almost a common occurrence to put at least four goals in the back of the net. And they scored 10 goals in one game. So I think he's starting to see the fruits of the labor of this coaching staff and the development staff now that this team is about as healthy as it's been all year.
You mentioned health, and you know, I think, you know, you look in net there with Antoine Bebo, kind of real established veteran guy in this league, a guy you picked up in training camp, and he's only gotten two games all year. He runs into the injury situation. So how has the goaltending there been able to really hold up, you know, especially Hunter Miska? You know, I look at him, a guy that's bounced around in the Arizona system and comes to Colorado, and I think it's really stood out there as well.
Yeah, he really has. And you know, it's interesting. You mentioned Antoine Bebo, and they make that trade during camp when we were actually in San Jose playing a couple of preseason games against the Barracuda. And that trade was made, and it was just changing locker rooms for Bebo and for Nick Balazs. So at that point, you know, I think a lot of people thought, okay, well, this must be what's going to be the new number one guy for the season in Antoine Bebo. But as you had said, you know, he gets injured in the AHL, rehabs, then gets a chance to go up to the NHL, gets a victory against Vancouver, and then gets hurt in that game. So, you know, it's just one of those unfortunate situations. But the response you've seen from Hunter Miska and from Adam Werner has been fantastic. Werner went out and got his second shutout of the season last week on Friday up in Winnipeg against the Manitoba Moose. And, you know, Hunter Miska, he's just given this team in every single game he's played in a chance to win. And he's played very, very well. He's been really effective. And you look at his numbers, he's been a guy that whether it's been the save percentage or the goals average, you know, he's been in the mix in terms of the league's leaders and goaltenders. And, you know, when his time has come, he's taken advantage of his opportunity. You know, there was some time when he was in Utah and maybe was wondering what the season was going to hold for him. But when he got that chance with the injuries to Philip Grubauer and Pablo Francouz at the NHL level, he took advantage of it. And that's all you can ask from a player. And boy, he's done a tremendous job. And it's really, truly a very, very talented tandem that the Eagles have this year.
How would you describe Greg Cronin? You deal with him on a day-to-day basis there. You know, what is he like, you know, as a coach and what people don't see, you know, behind closed doors?
You know, he is a very detail-oriented guy. He is extremely intense. You know, he takes everything that comes along with the job very, very seriously. And I think the pride and joy of what he sees as far as coaching is developing players. And I think that's been his pedigree throughout his entire coaching career. And stops at the collegiate level, the AHL, the NHL. This has been a guy that's really focused on trying to get players to that next level. You know, whether that's at the collegiate level, getting them prepared to be a professional, or here at the AHL to get them to make that next little jump that's going to get them to the NHL for the rest of their career. That's something he takes a lot of pride in. It's something that you see at practice that he does a lot, and that's just one-on-one, working with players, trying to develop them and to get them prepared so that when they need to step in and they can play well. And, you know, you look at one of the early months of the season in November, they had nine players go up and play for the Avalanche. So, you know, those guys were certainly needed. They played well. And now that the Avs are healthy, they've come back down here and the results have been very, very good.
You know, you look at Colorado, I think one of the things that stands out, and I remember with the Manitoba Moose, you play those two-game home series back usually against the same team. That can be a challenge. It can be an advantage or a disadvantage. How do the Eagles handle that? And, how is that – is that a challenge for them, or is that something that they kind of thrive on?
You know, I think that they enjoy – the aspect of just trying to go out in that first game, get off on the right foot, try to get the result they want and get 2 points. And then obviously make the necessary adjustments as you go into that second night, knowing that the other team is in the other locker room trying to do the exact same thing, knowing that there might be a little bit of shuffling in the lineup. And as you know, there could be an injury at the NHL level between that first and second game where things have to change. And that's just the reality of it. But, I think it's been good. I think the fans have responded well to it. You go back to our time in the ECHL, it was very, very common. You'd play the same team three times in 4 nights. You'd play them on a Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and you'd see the same team, you know, 3 nights in a row. And obviously you'd get some bad blood that would develop by the time you got to Friday or Saturday. But, you know, I think fans have really come to enjoy and understand the two game sets here, and for them it's less often you're seeing the same team than you did in the ECHL or maybe in the Central Hockey League. So but I think as a team they've adjusted well to it, and I think that they kind of welcome the challenge of the adjustments that are made between game one and game two.
Chatting with Kevin McGlue, the voice of the Colorado Eagles, of course the AHL affiliate of the Colorado Avalanche. One of the interesting things, if you look at the stats and the numbers, the Eagles are eighth in scoring as a team, but if you take a look at individual players, you got to get down to number 58 or so before you find Jacob McDonald, who's leading the team in scoring. How crucial has it been to get so much scoring by committee in order to find results?
Yeah, and you know, go back to that November and early December portion where it was out of necessity because you were calling up a lot of guys from the Utah Grizzlies and the ECHL, and you had the Ty Lewis's and Tim McGauley's and Travis Barron's and Josh Anderson's coming up and playing big minutes because you were without Callie Rosen or Kevin Connaughton, Jason Magna, TJ Tynan, and some of these big productive players, Logan O'Connor, Sheldon Dries. I mean, these guys were out of the lineup for good chunks of time. So, you know, I think that's been good. I think it's also instilled a sense that, everybody really has an opportunity if they get thrown on a power play, if they get thrown out on the kill, that they'll be able to handle that situation and potentially thrive in that situation. And you realize that your fourth line could come out and they can score you the biggest goal of the game. And it's not relying on one or two tweener players that kind of bounce back and forth between the AHL and the NHL that, boy, if they have a bad night, you're going to have a bad night. Or if the goaltending's not there, you're going to have trouble. But, I think it's actually been beneficial. I know it was it's a tough pill to swallow when it's all going on and you're trying to piece together a lineup and you know that some of your big components are out there and that maybe the power play is struggling a little bit and the penalty kill is suffering because of it. But I think, again, as you start to move now to January and beyond, you maybe start to see dividends that came from guys like that getting so much time and getting a chance to taste some success.
Where does Martin Kautz stand? 16th overall pick back in 2018, just turned 20 this past October. Had a pretty solid rookie season. Where is he at here in his second year?
You know, the thing with Martin Kautz is, again, like you said, it came out and I thought had a pretty nice rookie year. He's still only 20 years old. He's still a young kid. But he put on some good size during the offseason, came in bigger, more physical. I think he's really made it a focus to come in and try to play what a third or fourth line NHL player would focus in on. And that's, being responsible, finishing your checks, being tough to play against, and, winning battles along the walls and in the corners. And I think that's something he's put more of a focus on. But then the injury bug came and bit him as well. He missed just about a month of time with an upper body injury and was out of the lineup. So he's got goals in two of his last five games, but he's only got 2 goals on the season so far. But again, he missed some substantial time. But he's young, he's raw, he's adapting to the North American game. but I think he has all the tools that are there, and he's got a tremendous shot. And again, as he's trying to put more focus on some of those aspects of the game that maybe he didn't have to work quite as hard on or invest quite as much time on playing overseas, I think he's starting to grasp the North American game much more quickly, and hopefully he can stay healthy the rest of the year. And, you know, I know that they would love at some point to get him a chance to play in the NHL this year, even if it's for a handful of games. And if he continues to stay healthy and progress the way that he has, I don't see why that couldn't happen.
Along the lines of prospects, kind of an interesting group. You look at Callie Rosen, Connor Timmins, who obviously has had some injury issues that he's had to overcome, Shane Bowers. Where are the three of them at in their development as they start to really head into the thick of their careers here?
You know what? It's interesting, and I think Callie Rosen's a guy that, you know, he's been up and down quite a bit and had a chance to play in the NHL level. And I think he feels like, you know, that's a place where he belongs and he can get back to and play some bigger minutes. He's been effective for this Eagles team. He's been a point producer. He's been good on the power play. Connor Timmins, again, that's a guy that's run into another bit of an injury here. This one, a lower body after he missed, you know, 18 months with a concussion. He was playing great hockey and I think progressing right along that that path that they wanted him to, and then just runs into that lower body injury that's kept him out now. And you know, hopefully he'll get back here in the next few games. But I've really liked the way that he's played. It's a very smart player. He's obviously gifted when it comes to the talent he shows on the ice and his skating ability on the ice. And then Shane Bowers, as you'd mentioned, you know, he's still raw. Yeah, that's a 20-year-old kid, but oh, he's come on as of late. I mean, he's got points in 7 of his last 8 games, and it's a guy that's just found a way to thrive out there. You know, he's playing with Sheldon Dries and AJ Greer as of late. They've had some great chemistry out there, and you know, Bowers is one of those prototypical young prospects that when you see the flashes coming a little bit more often, as they have been here as of late, it gets you excited as to what his future holds.
You know, I look at that roster, and I, you know, some of the real top character veterans around the league really come out to mind. Sheldon Dries, Colin Campbell, you know, guys that have won or gone deep into the playoffs. Andrew Knuff, obviously, he's got two rings in the past 3 seasons. TJ Tynan. So has that been, fortunate coincidence, or was that a concerted effort by Avalanche management this year to bring in some real top veteran guys?
Well, you know, I think it was certainly something that was very much instrumented and thought out during the offseason by the Avalanche and by Craig Billington and Chris McFarland, and trying to understand those areas where this Eagles team could grow most from year one to year two. And that was, you know, trying to get a little bit more experience, get some veteran guys in that could help to develop, you know, these 20-year-old players that are first round picks, that are guys that you certainly have high hopes for moving forward, but they need some guidance and they need some players that can go in there, show them the ropes, show them how to be a professional, show them, you know, what the expectations are, both at the arena and away from the arena, and you know how to get to that next level and the things that that got those players there. So, you know, not only have they done that, they've been very, very productive offensively. They've gone out and you look at a guy like Dan Vanoff, he's been extremely responsible in his own zone, and it's what you expected from a guy like him. And, you know, I think that this has been exactly what Colorado needed from year one to year two, was the infusion of guys who have won and guys who frankly, are just their experience both in the AHL and the NHL. And I think that it's a source of advice that these younger guys really find valuable and they really try to tap into on a regular basis.
All right, we'll finish with a pretty general just prediction, if you will, or prognostication on the second half of the season. We'd mentioned earlier that as an expansion in AHL team, the Eagles get into the playoffs, they go out in the first round, sitting in a pretty good spot right now, 3rd in the division heading into the week. What does the rest of the season look like for the Colorado Eagles? What's the potential for this team, and how much would getting out of the first round make a difference for the players and staff there?
Yeah, it would be huge. And I think last year, with it being the first year and, you know, really literally coming down to the last game of the season to determine if you're going to make it to the postseason and finally getting in, that was wonderful. And I think that was what you really wanted from last year was just the opportunity to get to the postseason and kind of get your feet wet in the playoffs in the American Hockey League. But now as you move into the second year, you've added some pieces, you brought in some veterans. You know, as you started to see these prospects begin to really take those next steps, you know, I really think that the expectations, particularly from the fans and the people who followed this team closely over the last 2 years, are, you know, go out and be very competitive in the postseason, not just make the playoffs, but try to get out of that first round and see if you can get hot. You know, I think you have goaltenders who, if they can stay healthy, have the capability to potentially get hot and help carry you on a run through the postseason. But you know, for every team in this league, I think the first thing is first, and that's health. You know, this team has to stay healthy. The Avalanche, if they can stay healthy, that would be huge for this Eagles team, because when they have been healthy, and there hasn't been a chunk of time this year when they have been, but when they have, in the month of December and into the early portions of January, you know, they put together an 8-game winning streak, an 11-game point streak. The talent is there. I think they're well coached and they're motivated, and I think they sense how good they can be, and then they can play well against the Milwaukees and the Tucsons and get wins against those clubs. They feel like, why not? Why couldn't we go out there, if we can stay healthy, take this team and see how far we can go?
For me, it's one of the most intriguing stories in the American Hockey League, the jump up and the market in general, and we really appreciate you filling us in on what it's like down there in Colorado and what we can expect from the Eagles moving forward. Thanks so much for doing this.
My pleasure, guys. Appreciate the opportunity, and enjoy the second half of the year.
Episode 12 of Season 1 of Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network with David Foote and Patrick Williams. Thanks to Kevin McGlue for his insight into the Colorado Eagles. Again, I said it at the end of the interview there, Pat, but to me, it's one of the most intriguing storylines of a franchise. I mean, you look at a place like Belleville or Laval as expansion markets, or even a Tucson where the decision just gets made to put a team there because it might fit. But then you look at a place like Colorado, where there was a history of strong hockey fandom in the market, and it's made the transition for them so much easier.
And I think, you know, kind of coinciding with that, a history of strong fandom for that specific team. And I think that's one of the things that can be a real challenge where, you know, this is something you see in the more traditional markets, especially the Rochesters, Chicago's, Energies, where they're not necessarily fans of the parent team, and nor do they necessarily care. A lot of fans are fans of their home team, and they're there to support the Rochester Americans or the Chicago Wolves. And you know, the needs of the NHL parent team are not all that important. So, you know, and that can go double for a team that's down in the ECHL or down certainly in the old Central Hockey League, where there was no connection really whatsoever to the NHL. So when you bring that AAA affiliation in at the NHL level, and the NHL team is calling the shots, and you know, as we've seen sometimes, winning sometimes take the back seat to development, and that can certainly rub fans the wrong way. But I think to their credit, the Colorado Eagles have been really able to walk that line, hit that, that balance of the making sure you're developing players for your parent team, but also taking care of the home fans there and selling tickets and kind of doing all the things that you need to do to actually, you know, keep the lights on and stay in business. So they've done an excellent job there, great infrastructure there in terms of their front office and what they have there. And, you can really see why the Colorado Avalanche were interested to go there, because it works obviously on a logistical and geographical basis, but also just as well as what the team has to offer, you know, from a hockey standpoint as well.
Yeah, it works so well. If you're listening in the Colorado area, you're an Eagles fan, we'd love to hear from you about why you support the team, why you think it's such a good market. Get us on Twitter at Around the A Pod. You can email us as well at aroundtheapod@gmail.com. Coming up in a few minutes, again, we're going to chat with Andrew Ladd from the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. It still kind of seems strange to say, a guy who's played so much in the National Hockey League, almost 1,000 games. And here he is in the American League now. He's played 54 or so coming into the week and one of the highest paid players in the league. So we're going to talk to him coming up in just a little bit. But a whole lot of other headlines to touch on from the past week, starting overseas with Canada winning the World Junior Hockey Championship. And we talked last week on the show about the American Hockey League impact on that tournament. And I think one guy, not for Canada, although Joe Valeno did, you know, play a pretty good part. One guy that got a lot of attention was Rasmus Sandin with Team Sweden. I mean, we've had the luxury, Pat, of seeing him play the last couple of years in the American League. And my broadcast partner, Jack Miller, always says he's 21. It seems like he's been in the AHL forever. But he really had a chance to shine. And that's one of the best parts about the young American Hockey League pros getting to go back to that tournament, is they can really strut their stuff and show what they're capable of.
Yeah, and I would sort of add that you know, for all the fans out there who think, you know, that kind of have an outdated notion what the American Hockey League is, that it's, you know, this slap shot type thing and it's just a bunch of guys running around and all that. It's not. Essentially, what you say at the World Junior Championships, you're going to see a lot of that in the American Hockey League and then some. So a lot of those guys there, I mean, they go there and they've already played in the American Hockey League, and some of them, frankly, have struggled at the American League Hockey League level. So it just goes to show you what the level of skill, what the level of talent is at the AHL level. I think it does get overlooked sometimes. But, I mean, Rasmus Sandin is an excellent example. He's been a real success story for the Toronto Maple Leafs, 29th overall pick. So, you know, not a guy that's necessarily was a, you know, top 10 type guy, certainly a, you know, legitimate prospect, a first rounder without a doubt, but a guy who I think has really exceeded you know, even those expectations. And I think for him, the thing that really stands out for me is he's not even you know 20 years old, and yet he's already put in two World Junior Championships. He went to the Calder Cup conference final last year at the Toronto Marlies. He's gotten time up with the Leafs. So for a guy who's, you know, not even 20 years old yet, he's really added some high level experience to his resume. And, you know, I think that's a great opportunity. And I think it's one of the real benefits of sending your players off to World Junior Championship, where, especially this time of the year where that schedule grind starts to really start to hit teams, you can send a guy over there and they have an opportunity to, you know, kind of keep things fresh and play in front of the big crowds, the big stage and all the pressure that comes with that. Have a chance to win a medal. Obviously, that's huge. And then they can bring that back with them. You know, a lot of cases come back with some good confidence and be ready to hit the second half of the AHL season running. So it's something that's really started to increase, I think, in the last 5-10 years, especially. Where NHL clubs are a little bit more willing to loosen the reins on their American Hockey League players and let them go over there. And certainly, especially as we've seen the 18 and 19-year-old, especially the Europeans, they're still eligible to do it. And you know, I think if you're an NHL team and you can get your player over there, I think it's absolutely a valuable experience. And you blend that with the season in the American Hockey League, and you know, you're going to have a pretty good season for your young prospect. So yeah, this was Sandin was excellent, and he was just kind of one of a pretty impressive group that went over there from the AHL.
Yeah, and some former AHLers winning the Spengler Cup with Team Canada as well. Maybe not as much pressure, I suppose, in that tournament. And I liked it a couple years ago when they let an AHL team in. The Rochester Americans have gone a couple times. Not the case this year, but another international tournament around the holidays where AHL alumnus, if you will, were taking part.
Yeah, and I can confirm that the AHL and you know, the league in general has investigated the possibility of sending one or two teams over there to kind of strut their stuff against the top European clubs. And you know, the main challenges with that is obviously just the schedule crunch that comes in there. You know, if you send a team over there, you pretty much have to allot, you know, a good 10 or so days by the time you go over there, set up, play the tournament, then come back and kind of get resettled, you know, over here. So that's the main challenge. But there's certainly been some interest from clubs that would like to do it. I don't think you'd have too much opposition from players to go over to Switzerland for the holiday season and play a tournament in front of some really rowdy fans in one of the real classic buildings in the entire hockey world and play for a little bit of a championship and, you know, get, you know, spice up the midpoint of the season. So, yeah, you know, any player that can go over there usually jumps at the opportunity to do it. And I think that would certainly go double for our team going over there. And it'd be fun to see how the AHL could stack up against, you know, your KHLs and your Swedish hockey leagues and some of the real top leagues over there. I think the AHL can more than handle itself, but it'd be fun to see them go head-to-head.
Yeah, it would for sure. Again, stay with us as Andrew Ladd is coming up on the show here shortly. But, you know, while it was the holiday break and things were a little bit slow, there were some pretty big headlines still coming out of the AHL over the last week or so. We talked in our opening segment about hot streaks, and we talked about them a bit last week as well, but we should probably mention the Hershey Bears again because they're still rolling, Pat, 13 of 14 wins over their last stretch.
Yeah, we got to keep talking about them because all they keep doing is just piling up wins. Like you said, 13 of 14, swept Bridgeport, back-to-back games at home. And then the night before the start of the weekend, they had gone up to Wilkes-Barre-Scranton, their big rival, and really put a beating on them 6-2. So they're just on a great run here. And, you know, they had a slow start, I mean, which is not completely unheard of for the Hershey Bears. It's happened before. Last year was more of a dramatic example where they were in last place midseason, and they went on an absolute, you know, tear in the second half, you know, outplayed everybody in the league, including Charlotte in the second half, got themselves in the playoffs. And then this year, slow start, but now they've hit their stride. Spencer Carberry, the coach there, is second year. He's really had nothing but success everywhere he's gone, and he's continued to do it there. And I think the interesting thing here is it's the final year of their affiliation deal with the Washington Capitals. So this is a pretty good way to, if you're trying to negotiate a new affiliation deal, and, you know, for all sides, I mean, if you're Washington Capitals, you can say, hey, look, we've put a pretty good team here in Hershey. And, you know, likewise, Hershey certainly has a lot to offer to Washington. So I think they'll get that deal done. It's one of the premier affiliations in the league, three cups in the last, you know, since they got together and 2005, you know, tons of guys sent on the way to Washington. I mean, the 2018 Caps Stanley Cup team had 14 players who came through Hershey. So it's, you know, if you're trying to draw up a ideal affiliation, I mean, Hershey, Washington would certainly be right at the top of the list. You know, they play in a top-notch facility in Hershey, excellent fan support. Every year they're one or two in the attendance race. And, you know, there's a lot to like there. And I think this is a team that's going to be a real dangerous team in the second half. They're not necessarily a team of real, you know, top end star players, but some of the parts really works out well there, and they're just well coached. I think that's the biggest thing for them. And they have the goaltending from Vitek Vanacek. So, you know, you look up and down their lineup, there's not a lot of holes in the lineup, and they've come together really nicely. And this is a team now that is really making a push, you know, for first overall in the Eastern Conference. And so, yeah, it's an interesting time in Hershey there. And, you know, the amazing thing with them is every year the Washington Capitals are a contender and can sometimes hurt the American League team, and yet Hershey every year, more often than not, right in the thick of things as well. So the two sides have really found a winning formula in the past 15 years, and they're still able to keep it going.
Yeah, it's certainly a model franchise. I don't think there'd be any argument around the league. And while I don't have any inside info about the whole affiliation agreement situation, from the outsider's perspective, it seems like it would be a thing to turn down. So I'm going to put my prediction on the fact that they get a deal done before next season.
I think that's a safe bet. I mean, and you look around, you know, what are the options now, especially geography is so important. You know, in the past, they were affiliated with Colorado, but that would never work now because everybody wants to have their farm team close to home. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons Hershey, Washington works so well. They're a little more than 2 hours from each other. So you can get a guy, you know, back and forth easily. Caps management is able to keep close tabs on everybody. And, you know, and the Hershey Bears, they play in a top-notch facility right up there with any team in the league. and excellent fan support. I mean, if you're the Washington Capitals, I'm not sure what you would want that would be better. And likewise, if you're the Hershey Bears, I mean, the Caps, more often than not, for the last 15 years, have given you high quality teams, you know, good mix of veterans and prospects. So it's one of those things where it just made so much sense to stay together. And I think they'll figure it out. And, you know, more often than not, these things are just, you know, relative formalities that they have to do. And they, you know, they just have to go through the necessary steps. But I'm sure they'll work this out and, you know, get themselves another agreement going forward.
All right, a couple more topics to hit quickly here on episode 12 of Around the A before we get to Andrew Ladd of the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. We've talked a fair bit about the Hartford Wolfpack throughout the course of the season, and every time we do, Igor Shesterkin is the name that comes to the forefront of the conversation. Well, he's got his call up to the New York Rangers. We've referred to him here on this show as the heir apparent to the King, Henrik Lundqvist. He won four games in a row before the call-up, and the Wolfpack sitting atop the division, but only by a couple of points, with those streaking Hershey Bears right behind them. How big of an impact do you see the Shesterkin call-up having on the Hartford Wolfpack?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough hit. If this is for any real length of time, I think that remains to be seen in New York. That's a big hit. I mean, Adam Hushka has been a real solid for the Hartford Wolfpack in a back role. But when you have a guy like Shesterkin, who's just, I mean, the expectations for him were extremely high to start with. And he's not only met them, but he's gone way past them. I mean, first in goals against, second save percentage, 23 games. So that's been the impressive part as well. He's really taking on a pretty heavy North American workload. You know, he had an absolutely phenomenal career that almost – seems you look at some of the stats that he put up in the KHL last year and the last couple years, really, and you're like, are those typos? But they're not. I mean, he's that good. And I think the interesting thing for him now is now you're going into a three goalie situation in New York. How is that going to play out? You have obviously you have Kane Henrik, you have Shesterkin, you have Alexander Georgiev, who's done quite well on his own as well. So how that's going to really kind of shake out is going to be interesting. I mean, you almost. It's almost like a pitching staff in baseball. They have a goaltending staff they're getting close to. So it's a unique setup. I mean, I guess it's a nice problem to have. And I guess, you know, they've developed both Shesterkin and Georgiev. I guess kind of if there's such a thing as a downside, I guess this would be it. It's developing too well. You know, I think any general manager in the entire NHL would be happy to have that problem. And it certainly gives the Rangers options if they want to, if they do want to move one of those guys and see what's out there, you know, in terms of continuing their rebuilding that they're doing. Really, they did it at the NHL level, but also did it at the AHL level. They pretty much tore everything down in Hartford, started from scratch, kind of built the whole team in Hartford around Shesterkin and built out from there. And, you know, the results have certainly paid off this season.
We go from a guy in the Eastern Conference who's made a massive impact on the back end for his team and is now out of the lineup due to a call-up to the Western Conference and the Stockton Heat, where a guy who's been making a big impact offensively is now out of the lineup due to injury. Matthew Phillips, who is a pretty highly touted prospect in the Calgary Flames organization, out with a fractured kneecap. And to give you just a little bit of background, Phillips, a sixth-round pick. So he's kind of an a la Drake Batherson type late-round pick, but in his last year, a junior, had 112 points in 71 games, put up a pretty good number of 38 points in 65 games in his rookie year, and was over a point per game through 28 games this season. That's a pretty devastating injury, and that's going to affect not only the Stockton Heat, but likely the Calgary Flames down the line, depending on what the recovery looks like from that.
Yeah, it's a real shame for him. I mean, he's had such a wonderful season, first half, more than a point per game. And you know, like you said, a sixth overall pick. He reminds me in a lot of ways of Andrew McCane, who was a you know, similar sixth-round pick, kind of on the smaller side. I mean, Phillips is 5'7", I think 160. So, yeah. On the small side, even for today's game, but all he keeps doing is producing. I mean, every level he goes to, you think, okay, well, you know, this is where he's getting at the wall. And yet, you know, he only needed really a season or so to handle the American Hockey League. And now, but he runs into this situation. The good thing for him is he has age on his side. He's only 21 years old. There is time for him to get things going. And I think the good thing for the Stockton Heat is they still do have plenty of offense around them. They have Glenn Godden there, who's been just similar in terms of a young player who was overlooked a little bit, and that is really developed nicely. You have Austin Chernick, a real solid established guy. Buddy Robinson, and right down the list, they have some skill there that they should be able to overcome this for now. But you know, for all sides, this is a really tough situation, and now he's going to miss. You know, he's on a month-to-month basis, according to the Calgary Flames, and that's not good to see. And now, you know, he's missing some really valuable development time that you really would like to see him there. But hopefully, for his sake, he can get back in time for the playoffs. Stockton should be a playoff team this year, barring a major setback, and then he can get some good experience that way. But you know, there's really no way to sugarcoat this. This is a bad situation all around for both him and for the team.
Tough to skate when your knee's messed up. So we'll wish him the best, obviously, in his recovery, and hope to see the youngster back sooner rather than later. Last headline to hit is a fairly major trade, and I say that because it's one of really the premier offensive players in the American Hockey League being moved. But what seems almost more rare is the distance being moved. The Syracuse Crunch and San Diego Gulls involved in the trade with Chris Mueller, who spent a couple seasons in Toronto and was with San Diego back in 2015-16. So familiar there, but what did you make of that move?
That was an interesting move, to say the least. I mean, things have not been good this year in Syracuse to start with. I mean, the team is kind of really underachieved in a lot of ways. They're 6 points out of a playoff spot to start the week in a tough division. So that's obviously a challenge that they're going to have to overcome. And there's just been some real defensive issues all season there. Certainly goaltending's been an issue. But, I mean, the interesting thing with Mueller is he signed with Tampa Bay as a free agent in the offseason. He got 33 goals last year, second in the league. He's didn't quite fit in there, didn't quite find a fit you know, in that Syracuse lineup and that system there. But he certainly took care of things offensively while he was there. Now he goes out to San Diego. San Diego certainly can use some help as well. They're in a tough spot, 8 points out of the playoffs, and they can definitely use some consistent scoring that he can bring. And I think going the other way is a guy you're familiar with, Pat Seeloff. And, you know, I'm interested to get your thoughts on him, but he certainly adds some abrasiveness to that Syracuse team that I think on too many nights this year has been a little bit flat and hasn't been engaged. And I think if he can't get them going, I'm not sure who can.
Well, and I'll say this. On a personal level, I'm very excited to see Pat Seeloff come back and be through CAA Arena a couple times. But from the team's perspective, I don't think the Belleville Senators are looking forward to seeing Pat Seeloff.
No.
Because he's, you know, one of those guys that you love to have on your team, you hate to play against. Also one of those guys who, if you look at him, you think he's going to rip your head off, and then you talk to him, and he's one of the nicest guys around. But it's going to add a little bit more sandpaper to that Syracuse team, which I think is something that they really need. They've got a lot of offensive talent and guys who can score, but throw a guy like Seeloff out there, and yeah, while he's a defender, he's still gonna, you know, remind you that he's out there, and you're gonna have to think twice. So likely open up a little bit more space for the offensive guys to do their thing. So interesting move, to say the least, but I think Syracuse, despite giving up, as we say, a premier goal scorer, they'll be happy with the return.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be interested to see Seeloff in that Syracuse building, tight quarters, and that rally fan base. When that building gets going, it can be pretty loud in there, and I think he'll feed off that as well. I could see him being a favorite there pretty quick.
All right, let's get to Andrew Ladd, becoming a favorite in Bridgeport fairly quickly, 13 points in his 25 games since making his way down to Bridgeport after clearing waivers from the New York Islanders. This is a guy who's played 1,000 almost games in the National Hockey League, and a la Carl Alsner in Laval, a guy who's really kind of bound by his contract, Pat, because it's not like he's a bad player. There's just a lot of money tied up, so I'm interested to hear what he has to say about adjusting to the AHL.
Yeah, it was an interesting conversation. Just a little background. I covered the Winnipeg Jets for 5 years, and Andrew Ladd was the captain there. Highly respected guy. He was really the first face of that franchise early on when they kind of needed that instant credibility. He was there to bring it. He was the captain coming in for the Atlanta Thrashers. Kind of sold the rest of his teammates who were, frankly, quite skeptical of the whole move. He really sold them on Winnipeg and brought them in there. And he navigated that team through some very difficult times over those 5 years. There were definitely some challenging personalities in that room that he had to manage. Goes off to the Chicago Blackhawks and over to New York Islanders, signs a big contract and runs into injuries there. And here he is. And, you know, it was interesting to see him. I mean, you know, in some ways he's the same Andrew Ladd he's always been. In other ways, you know, I did get the sense that it was definitely a hit to professional pride coming down to the American Hockey League, you know, after, like you said, playing on nearly 1,000 NHL games, fourth overall pick. This guy's scored, you know, 29 goals in the NHL, a top player for a long time. And he has this now age 34. And this is a tough business sometimes. I mean, no one's going to feel sorry for him in the sense of, you know, he's still making, you know, excellent money down there, but you know, certainly the professional pride is a little bit damaged. But I think to his credit, you know, I've seen him play in person a number of times, and you know, he brings it every night. He's still you know, competes. He's not just coming down here for, you know, leisurely skate and going through the motions. And that can be the risk sometimes when NHL players do come down and they're not happy to be there, and kind of make everyone aware of that. You know, I think the opposite has been true for Andrew Ladd. He's really come down, fit in nicely, mentors that team. There's some interesting prospects on that team. Josh Hosang, Kiefer Bellows, some young guys who need the mentorship. And, you know, having a guy, I mean, if you can have a player who played 1,000 games in the NHL to kind of show you the way if you're trying to make the NHL, I mean, that's a massive advantage. And he also still, certainly for Bridgeport, can produce offensively. So he's been a big boost for that team. They really needed some scoring help, and they got it from him in a major way.
So let's find out how Andrew Ladd is adjusting to the American Hockey League. He joined Pat last week, and we'll hear from him now on Around the Edge.
How's it felt so far when they get into spring training?
Crispy, pretty good. Played three games in a row. Then I got sick. And I've been sick for I don't know, it's going around for everyone. And I've been sick for 7 days. And today is the first day that it's only my cough.
Yeah.
I stepped on a stick today. Got a little banged up and just wanted to be safe rather than sorry.
Yeah. How's it, you know, to come in at this stage of the season? Everyone's kind of been playing and you have to try to catch up to their pace at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I had 3 points in my first three games. I think, again, I think, again, being sick has kind of held me back, the last couple of weeks. But it's okay. This is a trials and tribulations of the season. So I'm not too concerned about it. I just want to help the team head in the right direction, and I feel like it's definitely easier when I'm healthy.
So being around your teammates again, some of the guys from last year that are back this year.
Yeah, I know, it's great. It's, you know, familiar, and it's kind of an easy situation to slide into. I think it'd probably be harder if it was a new team. I love the guys on the team. It's great to see guys who played with last year who maybe weren't as effective as they are this year. The improvements that they've made. Big shout out to Kiefer Bellows. He's been amazing this year, and he's just he's grinding. He's knocking on the door for that call up. And I've been here for 3 weeks, and I don't think that anyone deserves it more than him right now. And I know that down there's definitely taking a look at him, but I definitely think that they should take double the look at him, because I've watched him play and he's been fantastic this season. I'm super proud of him. He's come such a long way from last year, and I hope he keeps heading in the right direction.
It's like having a guy like Andrew Ladd, played 800-something games in the NHL, captain, like kind of done it all at that level. What's it like to have him in the room every day here?
It's great. I've known Ladder for, we're going on 4 years now. So, him and I, we've had our talks, and Ladder's a great guy. He's so easygoing. He just wants to help us all, and so it's nice to be around a guy like that always. And he's been through the ringer, and he's done it all. It's nice when you get to play with a legitimate NHL player. It's been good, and for me, it's just about hopefully I feel healthy soon and get back into it.
You mentioned that Rainer, this business can grind a lot of players up. What have you learned, from the time you turned pro now in the last few years, how this business works and what it's like for not just you, but all these guys in here?
Yeah, I think it's hard for everyone. I think that every player should be proud of, what they accomplished in this league, in the NHL level, all of it. At the end of the day, it's just about feeling good about yourself. I think sometimes you focus too much on what's ahead of you instead of enjoying what you're doing. And at the end of the day, I'm playing professional hockey, whether it's where I want to be or not. It's such a gift to be able to play the game you love, and so I feel very fortunate. And I hope that everyone who plays hockey at the professional level feels fortunate. And I know it can be difficult, but at the same time, I do think that everyone should be extremely grateful because this is a dream for a lot of people.
Did your time away from the team kind of reinforce that for you, that this is a gift and this is a special, unique opportunity?
Yeah, for sure. I did a lot of work on myself and tried to do some soul searching, I guess you could say. I realized that they complain about everything or enjoy everything, and so I'm just trying to enjoy everything. Obviously, I have opinions on things, but opinions aren't necessarily the emotion that I carry.
Yeah.
It's just if something's right, I'll say it's right. If something's wrong, I'll say it's wrong. And for me, it's more important to just be present.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I've enjoyed that. I definitely wish I was feeling better. It's so annoying when you want to do more and you can't. But taking it slow and grateful for how everyone's treated me.
Last thing, what has Brandon, kind of done for you? Of your growth here over the last year, sometimes, it's a tough role for a coach, for a young player who wants to be in the NHL, and for him to kind of pull the reins back a little bit. What have you seen from him and yourself in the last couple of years?
I'd rather not answer that question. Sorry.
Okay, just last thing. What do you think you need to do to stick in the NHL full-time? Obviously, the skills are... What do you have to do to make the Islanders say okay, or someone else say, he's ready?
I don't know. I just think I have to keep heading in the right direction. For me, a lot of the times, it's not necessarily they talk to me about my consistency.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've been working on is getting my, I know it sounds really weird, but getting my bad games under control.
Yeah.
So my good games are great. I feel like no one can stop me, but my bad games, I feel like
your highs are high and your lows are low.
Yeah, I just feel like my lows, they used to affect the team a lot more than they do now. And I've been trying to control that, on days where you're not feeling it or you can't really make those plays, recognizing that early and then kind of moving from there. You know what I mean? That's all learning. Some guys play such a simple game that when they're not playing well, it's you don't notice, right? Other guys, for me, when I'm playing well, I'm skating, I'm beating guys, And then when I'm not playing well, I'm trying to beat guys, and like, it's not working, you know? And so like, I feel like that's what happens sometimes, but it's definitely something I've been working on, and I do think I've come a long way. I think the stat I'm most happy about this year is that that I'm +3 right now.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, for me, that's an important focus coming back, is just being strong defensively, you know? You want to keep your the positive contributions remain positive, right?
Yeah.
So that's been my focus. And I want to keep trending in that direction. You know, want to be offensive, but I also want the plus minus to match with that.
Exactly. Yeah. Great. All right. Good luck. Thanks for everything. Hope you feel better soon.
This is Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, episode 12, with David Foote and Patrick Williams. Big thanks to Andrew Ladd for taking some time. Always nice to hear from a guy like that. What was your big takeaway from that chat, Pat?
You know, it's interesting to – I haven't talked to really NHL-type guys with that experience in a couple years. And, you know, there's just that level of polish and confidence that you don't see from your average AHL player who's – who's both younger and also doesn't have that decade plus of NHL time behind him, really to, you know, so that was the first takeaway from him that I had. And I think just the second thing was, you know, that's a struggling Belleville team, their last place. It's not the best situation to be dropped into in the best of times, let alone to a team that's struggling. So Andrew Ladd's in a bit of a tight spot. Then again, he's making fantastic money. So, you know, I guess, you know, he doesn't need anybody's sympathy. But it is interesting when those guys go down there. Every so often you see that. We've seen that with Matt Beleski. I remember a few years ago, Alex McGillney was down. I mean, that was almost surreal when he got sent down by the New Jersey Devils, the guy that was, you know, so dominant in the 90s. Part of that whole wave of Russian players that first came over, and then he's wrapping up his career in what was Albany, the Albany River Rats. And then, you know, it was a strange time, but now I think especially with the way the salary cap is, there really is no there's no room for sentimentality or, you know, mercy in terms of a veteran player who's maybe struggling. And in the past, a guy like Andrew Ladd would have stayed with the Islanders, and that would have been that. But now, with the way the cap is, and with teams really needing to make room and create flexibility, it's really tough. And you do have a lot of those guys now that end up in that situation. So that was kind of my takeaway. But I think you know, just as the way he was in Winnipeg, real top-notch pro. He does what you need him to do, both and on and off the ice. And I think those young prospects are really lucky. I think maybe I think they realize it, but I think maybe even more so than they realize to have that kind of player and play alongside them on a day-to-day basis.
Well, and you look at guys who you wouldn't expect to see in the AHL. We had a chuckle out this way last week when Ilya Kovalchuk signed with the Montreal Canadiens, because he signed a two-way deal. So technically, I doubt it happens, but technically there's a chance that Ilya Kovalchuk could go to the Laval Rocket and play for him, play for them. I think the more likely scenario is, if it doesn't work out in the NHL, they say, here's your $70K, peace out. Like, you don't have to go if you don't want to, but you never know.
Yeah, I think it's a safe bet. I don't think we'll see Ilya Kovalchuk riding the buses across the highways and byways of the Eastern Conference. Then again, you never know. Al Spagnoli did it. And Wade Redden did it a number of years ago with Hartford. I think the most surreal one was when Sean Avery came down, and that didn't go well, to say the least, in Hartford. Yeah. That was a bit of a disaster. And you know, really can go either way. Sometimes those guys come down and they embrace it, and they're just, you know, they're happy to play hockey, and they're still making their money and having fun. And sometimes the young guys energize them. It can also go the other way, though. If you get the wrong guy down there and he's sour about the situation, that could be a situation where you just want to get that guy away from your young prospects as quickly as possible, because, I mean, they're 20, 21-year-old kids. They're impressionable. And the last thing you want is a bad veteran down there who's going to kind of poison the well there and damage their development and their growth. So yeah, it's a tricky balance sometimes, but it's a thing I think we're going to increasingly see more and more of because there's really just no there's no flexibility anymore with the salary cap. It's very kind of cold and clinical, but that's just the nature of the system now.
Yeah, and we thank Andrew Ladd for his time to catch up with Pat and share some of his thoughts with us here on Around the A. Thanks as well to Kevin McGlue, who's the voice of the Colorado Eagles. Again, you can find him on Twitter at KMcGlue. And do yourself a favor, read up on the Colorado Eagles and their history, because it's a really cool story of a team that started two leagues below and is now one step away from the NHL, and such a good affiliation and such a good fan base there around the Colorado Avalanche and that organization. Coming up next week, Pat, we're going to dive into the All-Star rosters that were announced this past week. There's some interesting names there. We don't think all of them are going to stay, but we'll give a bit of a rundown on who was initially named, at least, and maybe some All-Star skills competition ideas, maybe to freshen things up a bit.
Yeah, it's always interesting how many of those guys, from the time they announce it to the actual event, actually make it there. That's one of the kind of, I guess, the pitfalls of, this league is so heavily based around development. Well, those guys in this league, yeah, they can get caught up on a moment's notice, and before you know it, they're in the NHL. And every year this happens, the league has to adjust on the fly, and they're still trying to get the representation from all the teams. So it's a difficult balance. Keeping both the needs of the NHL's teams as well as what the AHL needs, trying to make that all work. But every year they seem to pull it off. And I think certainly this year, with it being on the West Coast for the first time, it should be a really interesting setup. And I think it will be nice for those fans out West to really get their first look at some of those Eastern Conference teams that they hear about but never really get to see in person. You know, your Hershey Bears and your Belleville Senators of the world, who will now be represented out there on the West Coast. So it should be fun. Definitely an interesting time every year. It'll be the final time that Dave Andrews oversees us before he hangs it up after this season.
Should be fun, should be interesting, and much like every episode of Around the A. So make sure to stay tuned for episode 13, the first annual Around the A All-Star Extravaganza, coming up next week here on Around the A. For now, we'll say goodbye, and thank you for listening to episode 12. Again, subscribe to us wherever it is that you're listening. Give us a rating. Send us your feedback at Around the A Pod. And until then, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Around the A. Be sure to tune in again next week. Find Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Interact with us on social media. Give us your thoughts using the hashtag Around the A and follow us at Around the A Pod.